We continue in our study of the book of Revelation. And as I described it, it's kind of like trying to get a big drink out of a fire hose. And we have to take steps in order to get as much into us as we can in smaller portions instead of trying to take the whole thing at once. And that has required us to keep resorting back to the Old Testament book of Daniel in order to get some of the decoding information for what we're reading right now in Revelation chapter number 13. Well, today I want us to also draw in some decoding information from later in the book of Revelation. Before we get to that, let's go back to Revelation 13 at verse number 1 and start our review of everything that we kind of know up to this point. And then we'll start bringing in some decoding information. Revelation 13, 1, this is John speaking after he'd seen Satan and his angels kicked out of heaven down onto planet Earth, and they tried to take out some of God's people represented by the woman. But the two wings of the great eagle, which would be the two witnesses, I think, are dispatched to take her away where she can't be harmed, I think right off to Jerusalem, because that's where the two witnesses do their ministry. And we're told that Satan, in his wrath, decides that he's going to go out and see what he can do to harm other believers, other sons and daughters of this woman that is now out of his crosshairs. And he ends up down on the seashore. And it seems as if the Mediterranean is more than likely in mind. And then John sees a vision similar to what we see in Daniel chapter 7. Revelation 13, 1, I saw a beast rising up out of the sea. Now, Daniel had seen four individual beasts, but John is only seeing one, and it's a conglomeration of those old four beasts of Daniel chapter 7. But it had 10 horns and 7 heads. Now, the 10 horns, we'll find out, are on one of those 7 heads. And it had 10 diadems on its head, on its horns, and it had blasphemous names on all its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard, so it probably had a leopard-like body. Its feet were like that of a bear's. Its mouth was like that of a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. So Satan is looking for an entity or an organization on planet Earth that would be willing to function as his puppet in trying to carry on his operations against God and against humanity that is seeking out God or already has a relationship with God. And so he apparently finds a government that has been reconstituted out of the chaos of the beginning of the final 3.5 year day of the Lord. And you can imagine that if the sun goes dark and the moon goes blood red and the stars, specifically these angels, are falling from the sky, most governments are probably going to collapse in the midst of all that chaos. I mean, imagine if the electric grid goes down at the same time as all these things happening. It is going to be a mess, and people are going to be looking for someone to come in and take charge. And that's apparently what happens with the rise of this government that Satan is now going to use. Verse 3 says, one of its heads, so one of the 7 heads, seemed to have a mortal wound, so it looked like it had been killed. But its mortal wound had been healed. And so the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. So I'm going to suggest to you quite strongly that what's being described here is whatever world-impacting government exists whenever the day of the Lord hits and the chaos ensues, that government is also going to look like it collapses. But it apparently, through the efforts of 10 people, will be reconstituted pretty quickly. It'll get its feet back under itself pretty fast, which is probably why Satan decides to use it as his puppet. And in Revelation chapter 17 now, we have an angel that explains to John the imagery, meaning of this beast. And we're going to start in verse number 8 of Revelation 17. The beast that you saw was, so it used to exist, and then is not, so it went out of existence, and it's about to come up out of the abyss. So he's talking to John, saying in a future state, after it's gone out of existence, it's going to come up out of the abyss. The abyss, it's got multiple meanings to it, and one of those meanings is chaos. So the chaos of the collapse that is brought on by the beginning of the day of the Lord. This beast is going to come back up amidst that chaos. And then John is told it will go on to destruction. So it is only going to be back for a while, and then it'll be out of there again permanently. That'll be when Jesus comes back. Those who dwell on the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast that he was and is not and will come. So John is told specifically, the people who are believers will not get sucked in by this, because they will know that this is not on the up and up. But those who are not believers will be open to this final lie, that the beast is the one that can save you, because that's what it's going to be presented as. Only the beast government and the beast leader and their alliance with the dragon can save you. You've got to throw your lot in with that group. You've got to be on their side. You've got to be allied with them. Okay? Verse number 9 of Revelation 17. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now, I think there's a double meaning that comes through the text here. One of those meanings we'll get back to later, and that is in John's period, the city of Rome, specifically, it was called the city of seven mountains or the city of seven hills. We'll come back to that later when it's related to the woman that's sitting here, because we haven't gotten to her yet. But mountains, as we've also talked about from the book of Daniel, are often referred to as governments. It's representative of governments or kingdoms. And that's what verse 10 says, and that's where I want us to focus. They are also seven kings, or seven kingdoms. Last session, we talked about this idea that you can talk about a singular king, meaning the first who governed that empire or that kingdom. And then the whole thing is represented by that singular king. So Babylon starts with Nebuchadnezzar. Medo-Persia starts with Cyrus. Macedonia starts with Alexander. So you understand, when we talk about the king here, we're actually talking about the entire kingdom that came from them. So these seven heads are specifically seven kings or kingdoms. And then comes the really helpful decoder. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must remain a little while. So let's start in reverse order. So the one who has not yet come, but when he does come, he only sticks around a little while, that's the beast leader government. That's the final world government that is coming up out of the abyss, and it's going to go back into that abyss, back into that destruction. For John's perspective, the one that is clearly Rome. The Roman Empire was the one that John was quite familiar with. So that is head number seven. And the other it also becomes head number eight as well. All right, so five that have fallen in the past, what would that be? We'll just go backwards in the ones we already know. We know that Rome was preceded by Macedonian Greece. We know Macedonian Greece was, the Macedonian Greek Empire of Alexander the Great was preceded by the Medo-Persian Empire. The Medo-Persian Empire was preceded by the Babylonian Empire. We've already talked about them. These are the ones that are tied in to the imagery at the beginning of Revelation 13. Greece was the leopard, and the bear represents Medo-Persia, and the lion is represented by Babylon. So that's three of the five heads that have fallen. So who are the other two? And I think it's just a matter of continuing the process of going backwards. Babylon was preceded by Assyria, and Assyria was preceded by Egypt. And Egypt was the one that Israel started under. And so when we come to that understanding, then this seven-headed beast represents all of the governments that have existed in the time period that Israel has existed. From the time of Egypt and the Exodus back in the 16th century of BC, right up to the present time, waiting for the wrap-up that's going to come with the day of the Lord and the second coming of Jesus. And so that makes perfect sense that five of those enemies of Israel, because all of them caused Israel trouble, five of those that had blasphemous names on them because all of them denied the truth of the sovereignty of He who is. So all five of those are gone. Rome, which John knew, mutated over time until finally we end up with the seventh/eighth head, the one that exists right before the day of the Lord begins, and the one that comes back up out of the destruction of the day of the Lord's initiation. To help on that, we go back to verse 11 of Revelation chapter 17. The beast which was and is not is himself also an eighth and is of the seven, and he goes to destruction. So again, Rome is number six, the Rome that John knows. But that Rome becomes number seven, which is the Rome we're kind of familiar with. Rome as it disintegrated into all of its multiple kingdoms and then finally into these countries, and it keeps wanting to come back together. And eventually, right before the day of the Lord, apparently they'll get their act together enough that they'll look pretty organized. And we have some candidates along those lines. I think the three ones that are most obvious related into this effort would be the European Union, NATO, and the United Nations. So they kind of all have similar interests in mind to keep the peace mostly where? In the European zone of the world. The North Atlantic, the Western world, and Europe and all its associated affiliates that trade with them, trade partners with Europe. So I think we may already have that seventh head pretty much in place already, right now. But that head will be killed with the breaking of the seventh seal, or excuse me, the breaking of the sixth seal. The sun going dark, the moon going blood red, and the stars or the angels falling from the sky. I think that'll do it in temporarily. And then it'll come back in full fury, looking similar, but being run by 10 people. Let's read it in the text. Verse number 12 of Revelation 17. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. Now, that's not a literal hour. It's a reference to for a short period of time, as in only the time until Jesus comes back after the day of the Lord gets started. So less than 3.5 years. Now, verse 13 says, these, meaning the 10, have one purpose, and they give their power and their authority to the beast. So they are all on board with supporting the beast government and the beast leader of that government. Because you remember from our studies from Daniel chapter 7 that among these 10 horns, as they are described there in that text, an 11th horn will rise up. It'll shove 3 of the previous horns out of the way, and it will then grow big and mean and strong and boastful, and it will be the beast leader that causes all the trouble. But he will continue working with these guys, doing what? Well, verse 14 of Revelation 17. These will wage war against the Lamb. Their goal will be to keep Jesus from invading planet Earth, to keep Jesus from coming as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. It will be a worldwide alliance and commitment to stop the return of Jesus. And those who are with him are the called and the chosen and the faithful, because he's the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. So they will be against Jesus and anybody that's on Jesus' side. Now, we'll get back to chapter 17 later, because I'm not yet ready to go into the rest of the cracking of the code here, because we don't have the groundwork laid yet. So let's go back to Revelation 13, verse 3 again. Because as I've already mentioned once, I'm going to suggest it to you again, that verse 3 might not just simply apply to the government, but it might also apply to the beast leader himself. We already know that the government head will look like it was killed and then come back to life. That's the seventh head going down and the eighth head coming up out of the abyss. But I think it's also possible that the beast leader, the guy, the person that is alive whenever the sixth seal is broken and the sun goes dark and the moon goes blood red and the stars or the angels are falling to the earth from heaven, there's going to be so much chaos, a lot of people are going to get hurt, and many people will die in all of that chaos. And I think it's very possible that this guy that will eventually become the Beast leader might be amongst those that get hurt. And there's something in the book of Zechariah along these lines. And I'm not going to lay claim to this being my original thinking, because others have made this same connection. And I just happen to think that they're on the right track. Chapters 12, 13, and 14 in the book of Zechariah are clearly associated and tied in with the final 3.5 years, the day of the Lord, the second coming of Jesus, and even the beginning of the millennium. But they are kicked off with some things at the end of of chapter number 11. And remember, there are no chapter divisions in the original text. So these are really tightly connected. So in his job as God's prophet during the rebuilding of the temple, Zechariah is told to be a shepherd for a while. And then in verse 15, God tells him this: "The Lord said to me, 'Take up again for yourself the equipment of a foolish shepherd.'" That is, a shepherd that is worthless, doesn't take care of the sheep. Why? Why does he want him to do that? Verse 16, "For behold, I am going to raise up a shepherd in the land who will not care for the perishing, seek the scattered, heal the broken, or sustain the one standing, but will devour the flesh of the fat sheep and tear off their hoofs." So I think that's a prediction about this final world ruler. He won't really care about people. He will care about power for himself. And so there is a curse put on him here, but in the midst of that curse, it says something about his physical form. "Woe to the worthless shepherd who leaves the flock. A sword will be on his arm and on his right eye. His arm will be totally withered and his right eye will be blinded." So again, I'm not the first one to suggest this, but I am definitely going to jump on board with this. I think it's possible in Revelation chapter 13, verse 3, when it says, "One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast." I think that might be a reference to the beast leader himself as well. I think he may get knocked down and looks like he's out until Satan comes on the scene, because remember, he's been booted out of the heavenly realm to the earthly realm, and he's looking for agents to work on his behalf. And I think he may see this particular guy as someone that was in the works to be beneficial to his overall plan, and he's got some sort of wound to his right side. It's affecting his right arm. It's affecting his right eye, the right side of his head. And I think Satan may go to extremes to save the guy. And that this is the backstory, the origin story, if you will, of the supervillain, the beast leader, the horn, the 11th horn, who becomes what a lot of people refer to as the Antichrist. And the fact that he comes back from the brink of death itself is going to lend some mystique to him. That's my opinion. That's my suggestion. That's my speculation. That's how I'd write it if I were writing it as a novel. Verse 4. "They," talking about the gullible people of the world, "worshipped the dragon," that would be Satan, "fallen to earth. For he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?'" So he's the perfect world ruler, isn't he? He's the guy they're looking for. "And the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words," We already heard about this. It's the way it's portrayed in Daniel chapter 7 as well, where he's the horn with the boastful mouth and the eyes. And it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. That, again, is our 3.5-year time period for the day of the Lord. Verse 6, it opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, or his tabernacle, which that's a more special scriptural word about the relationship between God and his people. God makes a prophecy that I will tabernacle with them and they will tabernacle with me. When John, the author of this book of Revelation, when he's writing his gospel, he talks about Jesus tabernacling with mankind. So it's blaspheming not just God, but also God's people, those who dwell in heaven. And verse 7, also it was allowed to make war against the saints and to conquer them. Authority was given to it over every tribe and people and language and nation, and all who dwell in the earth will worship it. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of the life of the Lamb who was slain, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. So we're finishing up today, pretty much where we finished up yesterday, with a little bit more background information. This guy, this ultimate bad guy, is going to demand worship for himself. And that is going to be why, if anyone needs to be taken captive, he's going to be taken captive. If anyone has to be slain with the sword, he's going to be slain with the sword. Here is a call for the endurance and the faith of the saints. We have to remember Jesus' words as we close today. If you will be faithful even unto death, I will award you the crown of eternal life.